chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make the heaven in the middle of it. Rest make the heaven in the middle. We are rest make the heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot of things going on. We've had this Supreme Court leak. Who leaked? I'm leaving that up to my listening audience to do some deep research. There's all kinds of opinions on who leaked it. We don't know exactly yet. They're looking into it though. And that's just one of many things. We've got another vessel possibly on fire out in the Black Sea, a Russian vessel. And, maybe we gave them coordinates. I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but we're getting deeper and deeper into the Ukrainian-Russian war over there. Okay. Coming up first is an interview with Pete Santilli by Alex. And, they get into the WHO, World Health Organization, will be hosting its annual meeting, the 75th World Health Assembly, May 22nd through the 28th in Geneva, Switzerland. It's going to be attended by delegates from 192 nations. And it is during this meeting that we believe that they're going to hand over a good portion of our sovereignty to the UN World Health Organization. Now, Pete Santilli and Alex go into detail more on this. We'll have this up on our site. So if you want to see that full interview, come into thesecrettruth.com and you'll see that full interview. But here we go with an excerpt from that full interview with Pete Santilli and Alex.
The 22nd through the 28th, this huge body of 194 countries representing 99% of the world's population are going to vote to give Tedros, the person that was placed there by the Chaicoms, by Gigi Winnie the Pooh, whatever his name is, placed at the top of the WHO to give him total dictatorial power to declare a public health emergency of international concern. Why is that vague and ambiguous? Because they can swap it out with COVID, they can do obesity, whatever public health emergency is of international concern.
It's a blank check.
Blank check. And guess what? They're going to supersede. I mean, they're literally saying we will partner with and have everyone follow along with us. The United Nations, which the World Economic Forum is a part of course. The International Labor Organizations, Food and Agricultural Organizations, International Atomic Energy Agency. They will have power over every major international agency. And I'm going to have to revert back to Yuval Harari because I think I heard it on InfoWars. Harari says we need to do a better job this time stopping global pandemics from spreading. All of these nations, I'm going to tell you right now, they only have English versions of the modifications. The ones that were submitted by the Biden administration on April 12th, these other countries that speak four languages, it's a legal document. It's going to be legally binding with the IHR. They don't even have copies of the translation that they're going to be voting on the 22nd through the 28th. Now, of course, they're going to go to this thing, send the delegations there thinking, well, we have 18 months to kind of ruminate and figure out, you know, whether or not we want to stay with it. No, they changed that as well. They said now there's only going to be a 6-month period where they can opt out. These countries have no idea. Our own elected officials have no idea, or they're complicit in this thing to release our sovereignty. Alex, I don't mean to over-sensationalize by saying this. What this represents on the 22nd through the 28th, Biden is going to send his delegation to Geneva and vote to have the WHO flag fly over the United States flag.
Pete Santilli, journalist, former Marine, former political prisoner who was then had the charges dropped against him for the whole Bundy crisis out on the Pacific Northwest. joins us because he's been doing some of the best reporting and breakdown of the global government takeover. Now, I have literally, as I counted them, more than 70 articles and documents here in front of me. Everything we're going to lay out is on record. Here's the memorandum on strengthening World Health Organization preparedness and a response to health emergencies. This is the UN takeover of healthcare. This is the holy grail that Bill Gates wants. He says more pandemics are coming. And then we've discovered that Obama, and we covered this some at the time, put in this medical martial law right before he left, saying if we even think you're sick or you have a cough, we can secretly arrest you and disappear you. And other states have now passed laws to mirror this. So this is their big plan. And we had Pastor Rodney Howard Brown on that pointed out that in 2005, George W. Bush was pushing similar things of 15 days to slow the spread, mask, social distancing. So this has been a long-term plan, older than even Operation Lockstep 2011 from the Rockefeller Foundation. This is their big push. And now you have the CDC saying, we're above the courts. We want you to wear a mask. We're above the courts to take over the owners of rent properties. This is how they intend to keep us scared and under control while they roll out the new world government currency, the new carbon tax, the new social credit score. So Pete, we got 4 minutes to break. I'm going to try to give you the floor in the 45 minutes of airtime or so we have here today with you to just go through this. Thanks for being with us. You do a great job laying it out.
Thanks for having me, Alex. You know, I want to make a couple of things really clear because there's now that we're starting to bring some public awareness to this, and, of course, you've been covering it the past several days, people have been talking about a pandemic treaty. Let's set that aside because the pandemic treaty, I think, is a diversion to what's going to take place here May 22nd through the 28th. Now, I've been in consultation with James Roguski. He's done the deepest research. He was one of the first ones that I had landed on. And then I checked all of his work, and darn it, wouldn't you know it, all the documentation's out there. So I just had a conversation with Dr. Peter Breggin. He wrote the book. I have it here. Dr. Peter Breggin, COVID-19 and the Global Predators. He's identified over the past week and a half or so where I've been trying to pinpoint who the culprit is here as to what they're going to do May 22nd through the 28th. They're essentially going to give total dictatorial authoritarian power to the communist dictator Tedros at the top of the WHO. Now, who's behind Tedros? We know, and it's well documented, even Fox News, the New York Times, several different outlets have covered this, that China, the Chinese communists have essentially put Tedros in power. So essentially, this is a proxy.
And Bill Gates is allied with China, saying their response was great, they should take the world over. So it's Bill Gates and China.
That's right. And Bill Gates, I was targeting Bill Gates because Bill Gates is identified, especially when President Trump pulled our support of the WHO. Bill Gates came in and he became the top funder of the WHO. So I thought it was Bill Gates. Well, he stands to benefit, certainly. But this is all being driven by the communist Chinese. No doubt about it. Bill Gates is actually an asset for the Chi-Com government. But this is what they're going to do on the 22nd. Through the 28th. Now, just a matter of a couple weeks ago, the United States of America, through the Biden administration, filed some amendments to the international health regulations. And essentially, that's the legally binding document that's been in place since the 40s, where we agreed that the WHO would help us with the potential with a global pandemic, but we would ultimately have say-so through the CDC. And through the FDA and so on and so forth, if there's a global pandemic. Well, April 12th, they filed the document essentially relinquishing their responsibility, giving total and complete control to the centralized authority, just like Yuval Harari says, we need to do a better job with international control of pandemics. Well, the 22nd through the 28th, these delegations, 194 countries are going to get together. And they're going to vote on those amendments that were proposed by the United States of America. And it was actually filed on April 12th, right under our noses, but at the same time hidden. Now, I had forwarded you some documentation. You covered it earlier in the week. This process began before we even knew how to spell COVID. President Barack Obama on January 19th right before President Trump was sworn into office, a portion of the Federal Register included CDC changes in terminology for potential pandemics, like with SARS and so on and so forth, essentially giving the medical industrial complex.
Kelly, investigative journalist who's been through the fire, is our guest. I have spent months reading these documents, researching what's happening with the UN. They have a meeting in Geneva, Switzerland, that's going to be held the 22nd to 28th. They say the documents are secret, but their memorandums say the UN will control pandemic responses, but also other medical policy, just like UNESCO controls education policy and the rest of it. We're under UN control. The corporations fund and control the UN, then our government signed treaties with it and go under its control. And we need to raise the alarm and get Congress ahead of this and others, because Biden plans to implement all of this. We have to make this the central issue. Pete, you got cut off. Please continue.
You know, first of all, I want everybody to understand the severity of this existential threat. I'm going to lay this out as follows.
Oh, this is their takeover plan. This is their main attack.
This is it. The 22nd through the 28th is even more important than the pandemic treaty that everyone's buzzing about on the internet. So let me break it down. 40s, we signed a treaty with the WHO, but we said we're going to maintain our sovereignty. We appreciate your help as it relates to global pandemics. Then they modified the treaties. 2005, they published the most recent one. If you go look it up, it's called the IHR, the International Health Regulations. Then they further modified it. But before they did that, so let's just back up a second. Obama left office on the 19th of January, 2017, right before President Trump took office. I didn't even know how to spell COVID. They filed thousands of pages. The CDC said, we're going to change some verbiage, some definitions. There was public commentary. The public comments, and some of those public comments come from attorneys saying, what are you doing? You're going to surrender our sovereignty to the WHO? They responded back, HHS and CDC said, no, of course we wouldn't. Our treaty says that we will maintain control and run in parallel to, you know, to stop a global pandemic with the WHO and partner with them. Well, April 12th, just a couple weeks ago, they filed a revision that essentially cancels that out, giving Tedros, who was placed there by the communist Chinese. I can pull up articles right now. Look at this. A New York Times article, candidate to lead the WHO is accused of covering up pandemics. This guy was actually placed there. How the WHO became China's coronavirus accomplice. And here's another one. Gates Foundation donations to the WHO nearly match those from the U.S. government. Let's set Gates aside for a second. On the 22nd through the 28th, they're going to approve a document that's been kept secret. Just a couple weeks ago, April 12th, the U.S., the Biden administration, their delegation is going to go there and vote along with the other member nations, 194 of them, to give Tedros 100% dictatorial power. And this is what he has the authority to do it. And it's pronounced fake. It's a public health emergency of international concern. Now, you can interchange a pandemic of coronavirus or, let's say, obesity or, let's say, SEL by the CDC. They say that they've got a program right now.
That's right. It says any crisis, they then take full control.
It affects public health and it's of international concern. Once the WHO dictator-in-chief makes that determination, all other nations must follow. Now, here's another thing that they did underhanded. And normally, when you sign on to an agreement or you make modifications to the IHR, they have an 18-month cooling down period. Essentially, you know, let's take a look at the verbiage. Maybe we didn't understand the legalese. 18 months, we can pull out of this thing if we made a mistake. No, they shortened that to 6 months. So here we are, 2 weeks prior to this meeting on the 22nd of May, that they're going to give Tedros, who was placed by the Chinese communists, in power, giving him total authority. Once he declares a fake, they will even sanction countries for not complying with the WHO mandates. Now let's talk about Bill Gates. Bill Gates and Gavi are the biggest funders of the WHO. Do you think that Bill Gates has a dog in the fight for Tedros to be the leader of the government that's going to allow
him to Tedros is his minion.
It's his minion, absolutely. Now, I would started targeting Bill Gates as the culprit of this thing. These, you know, of course, the global predators, per se. But I had a conversation with Dr. Peter Bregan after I did the research with James Roguski. I need to put you in touch with those two because they're very well studied. But yeah, Dr. Bregan,
we've had Bregan on. He's great. We should get him back on.
Dr. Bregan, he's publishing a report today, and he identifies documents. It's well documented that the Chi-Coms are behind this thing. The Chinese government are using Tedros as a Trojan horse to bring in their global dominance.
Yeah, that's how you bring in a coup over America, is through the medical system, because Americans, on average, they've studied in focus groups. They even had Yale do a study before the pandemic. How do we get people to bow down? We use a bioweapon. We use fear. We use a virus. This is how they're doing it.
That's right. Now, the WHO, of course, this election that's going to take place on the 22nd through the 28th, the delegation that's being sent forth through the Biden administration, you know, we can question their authority because they seized an election in 2020. But let's set that aside. They're not elected officials that are going to be voting on our behalf. All these countries representing 99.44% of the entire world population are literally going to, and I've read the legal documents, they're going to give total and complete control to Tedros, the Chi-Com minion, total and complete control to declare a public health emergency of international concern. Once that gets done, now here's another.
And let's be clear, I agree with you. Even Gates says this now. I said this for 6 months. He just said it yesterday. We have the clip. This was a beta test. The real event, he says, is coming, something far worse, and he's on record developing all these viruses. This is insanely obvious.
That's right. Now, here's another big concern that I have, Alex, and I don't know how deep you've covered this. I know that you covered of course, I've done enough research on the snake venom derived peptides. In the vaccines, of course. Now, the water surveillance system, that's when I learned about this. Tedros and the WHO, they can declare a public health emergency based on surveillance of the wastewater system. If they say there's too many, you know, please excuse the term, but this is what they're going to do. They're going to test the wastewater and say too many people are pooping COVID. We need to stop the spread. Let's lock down this zip.
Well, no, they admit that global surveillance has moved to sewage.
Right. Now, they're going to declare a public health emergency based on testing the wastewater. Do you trust that the CDC testing our wastewater saying that COVID's
No, it's just it's an excuse to just shut things down whenever they want. It's digital martial law to force us onto phones to tell us where to go, what to do. And I mean, they admit all this.
They do. I've been following. I got away from this for a while because it was so nauseating listening to MSNBC and CNN especially. During the pandemic. But you know what? They're back at it, Alex. I'm listening to them. They're prescripting the narrative. They're saying the cases of COVID. They've got that COVID cases porn with the PCR tests and all that stuff. They're saying the cases are increasing. What does that tell you? We're getting ready for an election. Time for everyone to get ready to dump their ballots into the ballot drop boxes. But here's the big concern. Along with that, with the election coming up, with the potential for election fraud, if people are casting mail-in ballots, you've got a WHO dictator, Tedros, who's already been pinpointed by the New York Times for covering up epidemics or pandemics in the past. This guy will be able to lock down countries and will have plenary power to do
so. There's no doubt about it. Stay there.
This is getting very, very dangerous to our constitutional values and rights and so forth to do with the world, the New World Order. But coming up next is Alex laying out some things about Bill Gates is trying to create this germ organization. And that germ organization is going to oversee future pandemics as they come up, you know, make themselves available or become reality. But anyway, here's Alex laying out some stuff about Bill Gates and other issues about abortion in this leak that occurred from the Supreme Court. Here we go next with Alex.
Amazingly, today we do not have a large global organization dedicated to preventing pandemics. There are some part-time efforts. The WHO helps the world with lots of health issues, but it hasn't been given the resources to have this dedicated team. We need to create this group with full-time paid experts who are constantly tracking disease outbreaks. I call this the Global Epidemic Response and Mobilization Team. And so the acronym is GERM.
And so when Gates chillingly has been making the rounds the last week, whenever he comes out of his spider hole, better look out because he wants to telegraph and tell you what he's about to do. So he'll be called a hero when everything he talked about comes true because he and others that he represents are behind it. This is a life and death situation. This is all on record, and we need legislatures. We need governors. We need citizens and lawsuits. We need courts. We need Congress. We need whistleblowers. We need people to realize this is front and center of their takeover. We are the embattled front line of human defense against the globalist depopulation armies, the scientific dictatorship. It's Friday, May 6th, the year's 2022. Thank you so much for joining us. All right. I intend to open the phones up for several hours of the broadcast today, and I intend to cover the entire waterfront of incredible news, but here is the bottom line. America is fighting for its soul right now over this infanticide, abortion, baby harvesting nightmare. And we have massive news on that front, where the left announced 2 days ago they would start storming churches and pro-life centers and stalking and harassing members of the federal judiciary in D.C. and in other areas that do not submit to their tyranny. This is clearly a racketeering terrorist operation, but they are fully protected by the head racketeer terrorist, Minion, globalist puppet, but still he is the president in function. And that, of course, is Barack Obama enjoying his third term right now with a placeholder, placeholders known as Biden and Harris. Godless pro-abortion activists announced plans to storm Catholic churches, interrupt Mass on Mother's Day this weekend. They hate motherhood. They hate family. Report, Antifa attacks a crisis pregnancy center in Portland, ransacks it, breaks out the windows. Leftists direct protesters to intimidate conservative Supreme Court justices at their homes, and the White House press secretary defends it and says it's a good idea, and says the criminal leaking of the Supreme Court draft ruling is also a good thing. Now leftists ask if someone should kill conservative members of the Supreme Court over Roe v. Wade. Don't expect any investigation. Again, it's BLM, Soros-funded groups targeting members of the Supreme Court's homes, offering money to the activists, bounties. We'll be going through this. We play in the clips. That's in the stack. Then we have a very important stack on the whole COVID tyranny. It's in the SPARS 2025-2028 war game document that is really a blueprint for what they carried out with COVID for the year 2020 to 2023. And in there, we shot a report over a year ago titled SPARS 2025-2028. It's got about 4 million views on Bandai Video that you should go watch, because it's more important now than it was even then. When people like General Flynn saw the document, he was blown away, because the military will do war games, but those are actually operational war plans as well. So a war game is a practice of an off-the-shelf attack you're going to run. And in it, they talk about how when it comes out that the shot's going to cause blood clots, heart attacks, brain damage, infertility, autoimmune disorders that are AIDS-like, that they will put put little announcements out that they cycle on and off to look out, to watch out, that'll be published as like public warnings but not widely disseminated. And then that way, later when it all comes out, they'll just say, well, it's plausible deniability. Nobody made you take it. There's the report. Emergency Saturday broadcast, world shocked by SPARS 2025-2028 document. It's got 3.6 million views in that version. Another million views, another version on Mandot Video. The point is, 3.6 or 4.6 million views is not enough. Everybody needs to see it. I'm going to have it reposted under the live show feed today, so it'll be easier for you to find and share. And so what we saw in the SPARS document is now here unfolding in front of us. FDA limits J&J COVID-19 vaccine over blood clot risk, even though all the other ones do the exact same thing. Now, the J&J is a virus vector vaccine, or a spliced clone DNA virus RNA mixture of a chimpanzee and a dead human child, are fired into the nucleus of the cell, and then it orders the cell to produce the deadly spike protein. That's why statistics show the shots are worse than actually getting COVID and basically give you the same thing. And they do so many other things as well. But it causes so many disorders in their studies of rats and other animals. That's why they went with it, because it's then hard to pin down exactly what's going on. But they knew in their own CDC documents in October 2020 what would happen months before they rolled it out. Well, now the FDA limits J&J COVID-19 vaccine over blood clot risk. You know, if you try to tell people that 2 years ago, they were even starting secret trials that was doing that, they would ban you off Twitter or Facebook. But here it is. They now admit it. We'll be going over all of that. Pfizer's new 80,000-page data dump under court order is a nightmare and came at the same time as the Roe v. Wade leak. We'll be going over what's in those new documents. And really the biggest news of the day, and then I'll get into all the rest of it, but Gates and all his minions and cohorts are openly having a U.N. corporate takeover of all medical systems in the world, and a world medical ID, the basis of the world cashless society, programmable token, mark of the beast, cashless society system that brings in the social credit score, carbon tax, in their own words. Well, now he's making the rounds. He's crawled off from under his rock, saying creating the germ team, a corporate U.N. body, is the single most important thing we can do to prevent the next pandemic. And the UN has basically announced it's now under Bilderberg Group, Davos Group command yesterday. And Bill Gates promises there'll be no more pandemics because there won't be any more people when they are done. This is the cover for their economic collapse and takeover. We'll be getting to all of it coming up today, and folks are battling back against it all over the world, also New Zealand. They caught a bunch of theater where the prime minister and others, dozens of them, weren't wearing masks. But before they go on the stage, they put their mask on, and then they take their mask off. It's all for complete theater. She even says, go ahead and put your mask on. We're about to go on camera. And they don't even care that other cameras are capturing it. We got similar footage of this in California and Pennsylvania and D.C., with the politicians doing the same damn thing. They follow a battle plan script. Meanwhile, you look at this, you think, well, these are just kooks. Somebody's going to listen to them. No, whatever they put out is what the Tavistock Institute, the Davos Group, the Carnegie Endowment want. Transgender activists makes argument for all children to be put on puberty blockers so they can determine their identity. Talk about mass sterilization, mass evil, mass drugging. That is it. It's not enough, the plastics and chemicals and the food and water to hermaphrodize the general population and cause all these mutations and serious medical issues. Now they want to openly and directly do it. They're also in the news calling to put lithium forcibly in the water to make you behave and have a happier society. An antipsychotic metal. So that's what we've got on that front. We've got the leftists, more footage of them melting down of their sacrament of abortion, people not wanting to go along with it. It's all coming up today. But make no mistake,
this is really getting dangerous out here for everybody concerned. But we've got Tucker that interviewed Catherine Engelbrecht earlier in the week. I think it was on Thursday. And she did a study, her group did a study of pings around the drop boxes, and she came up with very, very good information. And so here we go with a really good, insightful interview, Tucker Carlson and Catherine Engelbrecht.
Well, since the moment that the media called the 2020 election for Biden, a lot of people on the right, a lot of conservatives have had questions, real questions, about the integrity of the election process that year. Now, we haven't said a ton about it. We've done a couple segments on it, but we've really tried to be as responsible as we can. You know, we don't want to make mistakes. On the other hand, we and you and every other American has an absolute right to seek the truth about elections or any other topic and to say what you think about it, period. So we're, turns out, the only news outlet left in America that believes that. It is now effectively a crime to ask questions about what happened during the last presidential election. That's not an overstatement, by the way. And why is that? Why can't you ask those questions? Democrats always ask that question after an election. And on some level, that's okay. It's not an attack on democracy to demand fair elections, to demand proof of fair elections. It's, in fact, a defense of democracy. When you defend the system, you're supporting the system. But the Biden administration doesn't agree with that. They want you to shut up, vehemently want you to shut up. The Department of Homeland Security, which, by the way, of course, is a law enforcement agency, the biggest in the country, believes that asking questions about the last election is a crime.
Breaking news at this hour from the Department of Homeland Security, that agency warning police departments across the country that false claims about the 2020 presidential election are fueling calls for violence on social media.
False claims about the last election are fueling violence. Now, violence is always bad. We're always against violence, no matter who commits it, unlike the left. But asking questions about the last election is constitutionally protected. It's a right given to you by God and safeguarded by the U.S. government, period. But they're telling you you're committing a crime and you're violent if you ask questions. Democrats have been saying this since Election Day. And keep in mind, there are questions. The last election was not like previous elections. Democrats used the pandemic to change voting rules in ways that made it much easier to commit fraud. That's just true. We have to do this, they told us. People will die if we don't. And at no point, you may recall, did the media raise any questions about these changes to the process. And then within moments of the 2020 election outcome, without conducting any investigation at all into a brand new system of voting, they concluded that any claim of voter fraud was meritless.
Sources tell CNN that top aides are suggesting that the defeated president, President Trump, hold rallies to drum up bogus conspiracies about election fraud.
The GOP keeps spreading completely unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud.
The attorney general now telling federal prosecutors to look into those unsubstantiated claims of voter fraud.
There is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. No evidence of widespread flaws in the mail-in voting process.
Well, of course, they have no idea if that's true because they did no independent investigation whatsoever. They're just shills for the Democratic Party. You know that by now. We're not going to keep repeating the same line, but it's just so glaringly obvious. They don't know anything. They're just asserting something because their friends in the Democratic Party told them to. So why the obsession with mail-in balloting? We haven't had that in the history of this country at the scale we just had it. Well, people can't go to the polls anymore because why? Why are they so in favor of mail-in balloting? And is that connected to the fact that Joe Biden, who is a husk, who's a mannequin, everyone knows that, somehow got more votes than Barack Obama, who's like a living person? Really? That's a fair question. But you'll notice the Democratic Party was thrilled about mail-in balloting.
The American people chose Joe Biden to be their next president by an enormous margin. The successful conduct of that election, among the most secure in American history, was not an accident.
The 2020 election was the most secure election conducted in modern history.
You're going to see states like Arizona and Georgia learn the wrong lesson from 2020, the most secure election ever.
That's just the most secure election ever. Really, Hairhat? Tell us how. They can't tell us how. They're just lying. And maybe it was the most secure election ever, but we have a right to determine for ourselves if it was the most secure election ever, period. We have an absolute God-given right. And in fact, we need to, because we have an election coming up and then an election after that 2 years later. And if we're going to have confidence in the outcomes of those elections, and we pray we do, then we need to be absolutely certain we know what happened in 2020. There's a long preamble to our next interview, which is with Catherine Engelbrecht. She has conducted what seems to us like an entirely legitimate kind of cool-headed investigation into the 2020 election. And we're happy to have her join us tonight to tell us some of what she found. Exactly. Catherine Engelbrecht, thanks so much for coming on. So this is a very in-depth topic. I hope we can talk at much greater length at some point in a different venue. But just give us the highlights of what you found.
Sure. Well, I mean, you laid it out. There was so much inconsistency in 2020, and we saw it coming in, checks and balances being removed left and right. You couldn't help but wonder why. And then when you had this infusion of private money that put these drop boxes in place that were largely unregulated, you know, that's just a recipe for fraud. You have inaccurate voter rolls catalyzed by this crush of mail-in ballots being deposited in drop boxes that are not being monitored. So what we thought was, what is a way that we can test the theory? Is there abuse or not? And we invested in a tremendous amount, 10 trillion cell phone pings, geospatial data, that allowed us to monitor the device movements around drop boxes to develop patterns of life to determine whether or not unique devices were going repeatedly to drop boxes. Over time, that became a pattern that included not just drop boxes, but also far-left organizations. And we noticed a pattern consistent with the nexus between both the organizations and the drop boxes. So over time, when we did this now in 5 states and 5 jurisdictions, as I sit here tonight, I can tell you there was rampant abuse of those drop boxes, and the data that we have is immutable and proves it, now buttressed increasingly by video.
So can you be a little more specific for those of us who are too old to understand what a drop box is and what role it might play in an election? Why would you have a drop box? Just go to the polls if you want to vote, but that's a separate topic.
Well,
how exactly might this have worked? If there was fraud, as you think these pings suggest, what does that mean exactly?
Sure. So in the 2020 election, there were drop boxes put in place at a scale that had never before been seen. There were a lot of promises made about surveillance video being attached to all the drop boxes and standards being enforced, but none of that really happened on scale.
Of course.
And so what we decided to do was basically geofence. It's sort of a digital way to put a net around each drop box. And then wanted to find out if individual devices crossed through that net, really what turned out to be an extraordinary number of times. Over the 5 states and the 5 jurisdictions that we studied, in order to make the level of study, the average number of Dropbox visits was 38. 38 Dropbox visits into the, you know, and, by the way, also including the visits to the nonprofit organizations. So there's definitely a pattern here. And then increasingly now, as we're seeing video come out, we're able to match the Dropbox pings with the video. And you see it for yourself. When you can match those in the states that had video, you see people stuffing in ballots. And nobody was watching this. Why even have surveillance video if no one's going to check it?
Why would you have a partisan organization, these left-wing nonprofits you describe, have any role whatsoever in the mechanics of voting? That just seems prima facie insane to me.
Well, this is what we've been trying to gain ground on for over a year. Investigate this. Why are these patterns here? And really, all it would take is the beginnings. I mean, this is the same type of data that was used in the January 6th event. They were certainly very good about rushing to de-anonymize those pings and track all of that. Let's see some parity on the side of elections. There was wanton abuse in this cycle, and we've got to get to the bottom of it, because if we don't fix this in 2020, which was outrageous. When you look at the way the numbers add up, outrageous. And if we don't get a handle on this, we are destined to repeat it in 22 and 24.
Can I ask you a really simple question? So why wouldn't Congress just pass a law that says elections are run by the government, that we all pay for, and we hope, and civil service rules, we hope, keep it nonpartisan? Why don't we just ban any involvement from any politically oriented nonprofit in the mechanics of voting? Like, left or right, why is that hard? Why should Mark Zuckerberg get to control the mechanics of an election? Like, what is that? That's crazy.
Well, it is. And you're seeing states now push back and say no more private money into elections. They're removing drop boxes. There are some positive steps being made. But all of these, many of these temporary changes that were put in place because of the pandemic, those are now codified. So it's the new normal unless your state is pushing back. And you know, states need to run elections, no question about it. But they need to run those elections constitutionally. And that's the missing link that began to emerge in 2020 is, so what, you know, no matter what the Constitution says, they're going to do what they want to do through lawfare and through consent decrees and through fiat. So if Americans don't wake up and recognize that this is what's happening, that there is an abusive process, we are careening to a really ugly place. I mean, it was 2020. Based upon our data, 2020 is beyond question. That outcome would have been different.
Last question. I haven't heard a single Republican office holder, certainly in the Senate, say we cannot allow left-wing billionaires to control the mechanics of voting. That doesn't seem like a controversial statement to me. That just seems like something that I think would surprise most people that it's even possible to be true. Why hasn't any senator said that? Are they so intimidated by insurrectionist claims that they can't say that out loud?
You know, there needs to be a lot more being said about a lot of things. I don't know. What I do know is that America's instinct was right. And even though a lot of the puzzle pieces weren't in place early on in 2020, coming now into 2021 and into 2022, the picture is becoming clearer. The subversion was, in fact, real. And we've got to take it seriously because it's not going to correct itself.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's always the same playbook. They scream at you so aggressively that you sort of back to, okay. And then you realize they're screaming at you because you're on the right track. It's always the same. Catherine Engelbrecht, I hope we talk to you again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Finishing out our program this evening will be Jay Dyer. He's talking about C.S. Lewis, who was a very, very prolific, you could say, writer. And he wrote a space trilogy of three different books. And I believe the last book, entitled The Hideous Strength, set up on Earth a scientific think tank called the NICE, the National Institute of Coordinated Experiments. And in that novel, it was supposed to be secretly in touch with demonic entities who plan to assume control of the Earth. And I think what Jay Dyer is discovered or has discovered recently from the reading of the Space Trilogy is he believes that the Tavistock Institute is that very scientific think tank in the novel, which was called NICE or NICE. So here we go with Jay Dyer finishing out our program.
Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. You know, I discovered something really wild in the last couple of weeks reading and doing some research that I thought, I woke up this morning and I had a dream about it, actually. And I don't typically do the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show based on dreams and premonitions I had, but this time I had to because, I mean, if I did, it would be like crazy stuff, like how to fly or whatever. But no, today we're going to be talking about Tolkien and C.S. Lewis, because I realized through reading C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy, which is an overlooked dystopian story that has actually redemptive Christian themes. I think that's why it's overlooked, is that you can't have a Christian-themed dystopia story nowadays. You got to have things that are really nihilistic and depressing. I mean, I think Brave New World and 1984 are great books, but they don't leave you with much hope. And the thing with C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy is that he brings in the not just the spiritual warfare, satanic element of what we're undergoing in these days, but he also brings in the redemptive hope aspect of it. But before I get to that, I want to kind of rewind and understand where we are in the long term here, right? Remember, in the French Revolution, according to Dr. Quigley, there were different banking interests that had put money into a giant revolution in France that would reinstitute what they called year zero. So when we hear the term Great Reset, you should keep in mind that it really is the same basic plan going back to to the French Revolution. The French revolutionaries wanted to instantiate an ideal, perfect republic based around pure reason. So the goddess reason was exalted at this time. They didn't really believe in a goddess, but they thought that the goddess reason symbolized the new order, the new global international order should be arranged around. And what this led to was a lot of frustration on the part of these insane, foaming-at-the-mouth revolutionaries who, when they couldn't get society to operate on a perfectly mathematical, rational basis, why, you have to kill everybody. Everybody that doesn't go along with it, off with their head. And this led to the creation of the Committee for Public Safety, which is estimated to have beheaded tens of thousands of people in the French Revolution. Now, the reason this is relevant today is because I was just reminded by my buddy Tristan when he was covering the book, Fire in the Minds of Men, which is by James Billington, who is kind of the historian of revolutionary thought. He was a Library of Congress historian. And in that book, he talks about how the revolutionary faith from the time of the French Revolution onward is a faith. It's a belief in the ability to perfect man, to overcome man, and to create a utopian society. And for the revolutionary, what always stands in the way of the perfect utopian society is the traditional ideas, conservative ideas, the ideas of God, the ideas of family. These things end up being stumbling blocks, in their view, to the creation of the utopia. So they locate evil within the created order. Evil is always some existing thing like a family or a government, as if evil itself had existence, as if it was something over there and not a moral problem. So first of all, revolutionaries have a what we could call a Pelagian view, that they don't think they think that you can perfect man or you can fix man through external means. They don't understand that man's problem is his own fallen heart, his own passions, his own desires. It's not something out there in the world. There's evil people, but evil people aren't evil in themselves. But you have this sort of Gnostic idea amongst revolutionaries that the overcoming and creating of a utopia requires the destruction of everything that came before. And that's something that the French revolutionaries were adamant about. Now, you're gonna be blown away when we get to the Lewis and Tolkien part, because I was blown away this last week or so reading this. And it just occurred to me, it finally coalesced, like, what Lewis and Tolkien were writing about. And I'd actually done an episode of my TV show from a few years ago. I had a TV show where we decoded movies, and we did two episodes on Lord of the Rings. And I thought at that time, well, it's a warning about technocracy, but it's way more than that. And I didn't even realize that back at the time. And I went and watched a bunch of professors and different people doing lectures on Tolkien and Lewis. And even those guys couldn't figure out what these books are really about. But if you read the Space Trilogy and if you read Tolkien together, his trilogy, they're actually meant to be kind of parallel. And I'll prove that to you here in a little bit, but you're going to see the continuity. This is not crazy. It may sound a little out there, but I'm going to show you that C.S. Lewis and Tolkien were saying the exact same thing as Alex Jones, believe it or not. I'm not joking. You will learn that they were literally Alex Jones fans. they were saying the exact same things that Alex is telling you. So why am I talking about this? Because how do we wake people up? How do we get people to understand what's going on? Everybody has seen Tolkien. Everybody has seen Lord of the Rings. Most people are familiar with Narnia. Not many people are familiar with C.S. Lewis's Space Trilogy, which is actually more sophisticated, more powerful and insightful than Narnia. But the Space Trilogy is about Tolkien. Did you know that the main character, Ransom, is Tolkien? Anyway, we'll get to that in a minute. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but going back to the revolutionary ethos, the idea of the revolutionaries was to create the new society, everything had to be destroyed that came before. And so they came up with the idea of a new calendar, right, with no Christian holidays, no Christmas, none of that stuff. It's got to be all new rationalist science man holidays. And they just made up stuff. Thermidor, right, which made up nonsense. Oh, we're going to celebrate Thermidor. We're going to celebrate science today. And all of it was just to replace and give people another version of what they had before, but what taught the revolutionary faith. And so they had to get rid of all the history, and they called it Year Zero. The idea of bulldozing and getting rid of all the past is fundamental to the revolutionary ethos. That's why you see the left and people doing this kind of stuff really hardcore in the last several years, they're not doing anything new. This is what every radical Jacobin Illuminist revolutionary regime has done. You have to erase history. And it's always erected around the notion of an oppressor-oppressed mythology that might have some truth. I mean, there's always been tyrannical, oppressive governments. But the problem is that they will act like if we can just destroy everybody that came before and everything that came before, then we can finally erect what we're after. But they never come to think or to consider that maybe their revolutionary philosophy itself is the problem. Maybe they're the ones that are evil and satanic. Saul Alinsky dedicates his revolutionary strategies book to Satan. And they think that they're on this revolutionary banner to create this great society that will be egalitarian. Everything will be free. It'll be great. And it always ends in mass death. Why? Well, number one, because they're under delusion. They don't really have a grasp on reality. Number two, they are so idealistic and married to their own delusions that they really think they can stamp into the world their perfect idealistic sort of Hegelian thing, right? They think they can make it manifest. And that's why when they find out that people oppose them, they immediately just go nuts and feel like they have to kill their opponents. Because the existence of people that don't go along with their program calls their program into question. It means that maybe they're not right, and they can't handle that. That's why so many people are turning to going nuts now. They're going crazy. They want to kill the conservatives. They want to put us in camps, all this kind of stuff, because they know that deep down they might be evil and they might be wrong. And so they have to double down. They have to keep doubling down like an Ouroboros eating themselves. Okay. Self-destruction. They literally want self-destruction. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. We were talking about how we're getting up to the 20th century's revolutionary ethos from the French Revolution. And I was telling you about how they had these ideas of perfect egalitarianism, perfect enforced equalitarianism. We'll make everybody, in a literal sense, equal. Everybody will be part of this giant blob, and that's why they were collectivists in the French Revolution. And this is precisely where you've heard, I'm sure, of Adam Weishaupt and his philosophy. Well, Weishaupt's Illuminism was communism. And he had been influenced by a lot of medieval communistic style movements to create the perfect society. And although it was not very popular at the time, there were a lot of secret societies that had sort of jumped on board with this at the time of the French Revolution. And over time, the spread and the same forces, the same ideas behind the French Revolutionary attempts to create the Great Reset, Year Zero, perfect society, did the exact same thing in the Bolshevik Revolution. And if you have read Billington, you know that he talks about how the journalists, I had a grad class on this, I totally forgotten this, but the journalists in the French Revolution back at that time, they were the ones who were the new moral fact checkers, the new moral preachers. Now that the church had been replaced, the journalists had the ability at that time to get people executed. If the journalists did an expose on you, back at the time of the French Revolution, right? Right. If Lord Babeuf was too fat, then he wasn't a man of the people because he was bourgeoisie. You see, he was overweight. So he's not really a revolutionary, even though he pretended to be, off with his head. And they gave the journalists the ability to dictate the morality and sentence people to death for not being a true part of the revolution. I can't believe I've forgotten that, because that's exactly what is going on Twitter. I mean, thank God now Elon has bought Twitter and things seem to be changing there. But typically speaking, the mainstream journalist is no different in his role, or he Zims Zerzer's role, than it was back at the time of the French Revolution. And I can't believe I've forgotten that. It was so important. So shout out to Tristan for reminding me of that. And when it doesn't occur, what do? Well, they just repackage and redo the revolution a few years later. And they'll do it in another country. It's the exact same model. They do the exact same thing. It's a scientific technique of revolution. And they did the same thing in the Bolshevik Revolution. So when the Bolsheviks did this in Russia, and they were funded by the elites in the West, by the way, they just did the exact same model, destroy everything that came before, raise it to the ground. And people like journalists, right, and fiery people in the salons and whatnot, just like in France. Like they stoke the fires of revolution. And anybody who wasn't up to date with the latest orthodoxy that week, it would literally change, was also subject to the revolutionary purging. And that's why Alex is always correct to point out that the first people that are going to be axed in this great reset are the people who serve the system. It's just a fundamental ignorance of history to not know that that's what revolutionaries have always done. They always, because they're not really about the revolution. They are always tools of money power, industrial power, always, or foreign powers. All revolutions in the modern world, in the last 500 years since the 1500s, all of those revolutions are essentially funded and used by some offshore power or some bigger power block or some foreign entity or some bank or some private industry. Even the great analyst and historian Oswald Spengler said there's never been a socialist revolution which was not the tool of the money power. And I don't agree with everything that Spengler said, but he was a, you know, wise sage, you could say, in terms of history and analysis. Spengler knew that. I think he himself had some kind of like a Prussian socialist view. So even he, who, you know, had apparently bought into this to a degree. So socialism and revolutionary communism, all of the isms, it doesn't really matter. They're all really the same kind of thing. Fabian socialism, Marxism, they all have the same modus operandi of raising to the ground everything that came before, and they're impelled by ultimately a satanic ethos. And even though they may not believe in Satan, they actually typically will say, you know, Satan is our symbol. Think about George Bernard Shaw, these different people, the Fabian socialists, and Bertrand Russell was amongst the Fabian socialists for a while with H.G. Wells, and they have this liberal veneer. But really, deep down, they are controlled by people like the Royal Society. That's how the Fabian Social Society worked. It was the left, the fake left arm of the real Illuminati. And by the real Illuminati, I'm speaking of the same powers and forces that were the money influence behind the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution. The same old families, the same black nobility, the same British royalty, the same banking elites, the same industrial elites. The exact same people today are not literally the same people. They're not vampires. Like, they're not literally living through the century, but the same ideology in these elite families, in these groups that vehemently believe that in order to erect the perfect society, they must kill most people. And why would that seem strange or hard to believe if you've had any basic history, if you know anything about the history of regimes, especially the communist socialist regimes, which believe, like Plato's Republic, the Republic is a communistic style society, they believe that you have to cull the population at regular intervals, right? It's like you gotta weed the garden. That's how they view it. And the same idea is combined with technocracy, which also comes out of ancient Greek philosophy that comes out of Plato's Republic. So when you combine technocracy with this, you get a dangerous mixture of the idea that, well, the previous revolutions didn't work because, number one, humans are fallible. They make free will decisions. They have these false ideas like love and family values or whatever, Christianity, God's existence. If we could just erase all of that and then bring in the technocracy, that will be the key to the utopia. And so it's a faith. That's why Billington calls it a revolutionary faith, that they will be able to set up a perfect utopia if they can overcome man. Man is the problem, according to these people. Humanity is the problem. What does the first global revolution book say from the Club of Rome? We have come up with the idea that humans are the problem and pollution is our new global threat. They even say, we just came up with it. So, I mean, there is such a thing as pollution, obviously, but pollution is not the great global threat. They just chose a great global threat. These vast corporate elite interests chose this because they are committed to this belief that mankind must be wiped out and overcome.
Thank you for listening. Good night.